This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm thrilled to welcome Jean Meltzer, international best-selling author of 5 books, one of which is becoming a film. Jean Meltzer has the unique distinction of being the world's only Emmy Award-winning, chronically ill and disabled, rabbinical school dropout, yet it is this very extraordinary background, coupled with a firm belief in holding on to your joy and seeking out happy endings, which forms the basis of her diverse work. She is an Emmy Award winner, founder of the Jewish Joy Book Club, and the Jewish Joy Box. I first heard about Jean from one of our producers, Eva, who talked about how reading Jean's first book, The Matzah Ball, made her feel cozy and at home when she was away at university, and how the book really warmed her heart when she was feeling very homesick. And I was fascinated by this, so I started reading some of Jean's books. And when I read The Matzah Ball, I was hooked, and I got it. I devoured it, and I couldn't get over how relatable it was, how comforting. And I totally understood what made Jean Meltzer an incredible rom-com writer, and I understood suddenly why she had been dubbed the Queen of Jewish Romance. What also fascinated me is that I'm older than my producer significantly. She's only 25 and I'm quite a bit older than that. And I loved the book every bit as much. I thought it was pretty cool that this book can be enjoyed by people of all ages. And I also felt upon reading the book that I had so much in common with Jean Meltzer. I couldn't get over how delightful, readable, relatable, and wonderful her rom-com books are. And I suspect I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone in this. But there's also so much more. So before we meet her, let me tell you a little bit more about Jean Meltzer. So as just mentioned, Jean Meltzer is the international best-selling author of The Matzah Ball, Mr. Perfect on Paper, Kissing Kosher, what a great title, Magical Meat Cute, and her soon-to-be 5th novel, The 8 Heartbreaks of Hanukkah. What a great title. She's the recipient of several writing honors, including Amazon's Best Romance, Apple Best Book of October, Apple Best Audiobook of the Year, Booklist Top 10 Romances for 2023, and Library Reads. And what's clear is that Jean is passionate about telling Jewish stories in new ways. She's the founder and CEO of Jewish Joy LLC, which is the umbrella organization to Jewish women talk about romance books, the Jewish Joy Book Club, the Jewish Joy Box as mentioned, and Jewish Joy Con, which is coming in 2026. Jean has served as a judge for the National Jewish Book Awards. She's a sought-after speaker, sharing how her experiences with chronic illness and disability have fueled her commitment to authenticity and joy. She is the host of the podcast Chronically Fabulous. I did listen to a bunch of those episodes. It's with Jean Meltzer, of course. As well, she is a founding member of the nonprofit, The Artists Against Anti-Semitism. Wow. Prior to becoming an author, Jean studied dramatic writing at NYU Tisch and earned numerous awards for her work producing television, including a National Daytime Emmy. And then in 2006, she left the entertainment industry, driven by a deep desire to reconnect to her faith, moved to Israel to study, which I understand more than you know. She spent 5 years in rabbinical school before her chronic illness forced her to withdraw, and her father told her she should write a book, not a Jewish one, because no one reads those. Thankfully, she didn't listen, and The 8 Heartbreaks of Hanukkah is her 5th novel, which we will tell you about and how you can pre-order it at the end of the show. Jean, it's delightful to have you here. Longest bio in the history of humanity. Welcome to Finding Your Bliss and congrats on all of your success.
I am so thrilled to be here and thank you. You really got me choked up, even just the nice things you were saying and you and Eva, the producer. I am just honored to be here and to meet you and get to know your audience.
That's so wonderful. We're so delighted to have you here. So Jean, I absolutely loved your first book, The Matzah Ball. And as mentioned off the top, I related it to it so much. And as I also said, I think this is common for most people that read it. And I couldn't get enough of it. I found it delicious. I didn't want it to end. So before we dive in and take a big ladle of that yummy soup of a book and how it all came to be, I want to go back to the very beginning. What I love as it relates to our show is that in terms of finding your happiness and your purpose, you've always loved storytelling and words. In fact, you talked about how you still remember learning your ABCs in preschool and you remember writing your first story around kindergarten. But as you've said, you didn't think of storytelling as a career until sixth grade when it all came to fruition when Mrs. Lakuta, your sixth grade English teacher, noticed your talent and encouraged you and asked you to read one of your stories to the class, to read aloud, and you did. They loved it. They ate it up. Can you tell us more about Mrs. Lakuta and how her encouragement, really acknowledgement, which does land in a very deep place, led you to becoming a writer, and how you knew even then that you wanted to spend the rest of your life telling stories?
Amazing, the amount of research you've done. You have my story to a T. That is amazing. I had always been a writer, like I said, or like you mentioned. I remember learning my ABCs in preschool. I was always just really attracted to the written word. But it wasn't until sixth grade, my English teacher, Mrs. Lakuta, she had given an assignment, a basic assignment. I believe we were learning about storytelling and fairy tales. And I remember going home and I wrote this story. I really put my whole passion into it. And it was about Princess Care-a-Lot, which is really, and Princess Care-a-Lot goes all around the world making things better. I actually found this story. My mom kept all my writing, so it's actually at home. I need to pull it out one day for people. But Princess Care-a-Lot goes all around the world making things better. I went in, I handed it in, and I guess she had read it and she saw something, a little bit of talent there. So she said, "Jean, this story is very good. Would you like to read it to the class?" And my classmates loved it. They laughed at the funny parts and they started to beg for more. They wanted more Jean Meltzer stories. And so it became the thing I would do. I would write a story. I would get to go into my sixth grade class and I would get to read this story. And I think it solidified why I became a writer. It was really this love of sharing not just humor and storytelling, but joy. And the truth is, I haven't changed that much from a writer writing Princess Care-a-Lot. I am still very much writing stories about women who care a lot.
I love it. And that could even become a children's book, just a thought.
Right. You're so right. Right? The dedication will be to you because I never even thought about it.
Really cool. That's really cool. And I love that you continued in this tradition, studying dramatic writing at NYU Tisch and earning numerous awards for your work producing television, including a National Daytime Emmy. Congratulations on that. That's huge stuff. And even though you ventured into television, you said that your major area of study was actually screenwriting. And I see that in your books, with the three-act structure, the dialogue, and the very visual action, especially in that amazing scene, I'm foreshadowing the matzah ball here of Rachel scaling a building to get into the gala at the Four Seasons. But before we get into the book, which I can't wait to dive into, how do you think the screenwriting track helped your writing? And what do you love about screenwriting?
So screenwriting, in a way, will always be my first love. I love the visual nature of a sort of indie film where every beat has meaning. So lifting up a coffee cup instead of saying something in terms of dialogue would have meaning in screenwriting. The use that every second has to really be filled with something that is important, that is vital to the story. There's no filler. But really, I love the ability to combine all these forms of storytelling in one medium. So music and dialogue and acting and creativity and set design. There's something very immersive about walking into a theater and being sort of taken away by film. And I think in a lot of ways, that same sort of experience happens with books, but it happens in your mind. I think they are different forms of storytelling. I think I had to learn how to become a book author, but you'll never not see those visual elements, the movement in my book. I think my dialogue tends to be very strong because I come from a screenwriting background. And yes, I love a good three-act structure, the hero's journey. I love when both characters arc, and I love a great build to a happy ending. I feel like people take it for granted. Oh, it's predictable or whatnot, but it's actually really a high level of craft to be able to do a three-act structure and have the subplot A and B come together at the end into a resolution. And so for me, I get so much joy out of just telling a great story.
That's so fabulous. And we get so much joy from reading it. And then all of a sudden, in what felt almost like a dramatic pivot, if you will, like a total reimagining, reinvention, you left the entertainment industry. And in 2006, you moved to Israel for 5 years to study to become a rabbi. And I do understand this more than you know. Yeah. And you studied at various seminary schools with different rabbis. What motivated you to reimagine your life so suddenly and intensely? And can you tell us more about your calling to move, live, and study in Israel?
It's a very interesting story because when I was 16, 17 years old, the only thing I was really good at in life that I felt like I was good at was writing. That had been my trajectory all through school and high school. My Jewish parents of immigrant children, when I had brought home a C and D in math and science, they were horrified. I was the only one of the daughters to ever bring home a C and D in math and science. But in writing, I excelled. And I knew that I didn't really just want to go to college and get an English degree. I wasn't really interested in anything but stories and movies and books. And I saw this, I was flipping through NYU one night. I saw Tisch had a dramatic writing program. And I was like, that is the only school for me. Wow. I need to get into this writing program. And thankfully, that worked out. I got into the writing program. It was 30 people only. It was a great program. I loved it. I excelled there. All the weirdnesses I felt as a teenager growing up in South Jersey, I felt like I had found my tribe, my people. Yeah, because when you're in the arts, you know, you're in the arts, you're creative, and you're with other creatives. It's this incredible feeling of just being home. And then I got into film and television, and I just wasn't that happy. I had had this like sort of idea of what I wanted. I wanted to be a TV producer. I wanted white walls and wood floors. I wanted to eat pasta from grocery stores with fancy names like Balducci's. And I wanted to be a TV producer, a successful TV producer in Manhattan. And by the time I was like 24, I had gotten all these things. I was creative director of my television production company. I had my nice apartment in Manhattan. I could afford that pasta, right, from Balducci's and other places. But the joke was on me. Wow. I was totally unhappy. I absolutely hated working in television. Hated it. Hated every second of it. Did not like who I was becoming. I realized that I was completely lost. That I had been living for my goals and not my values. And so I decided in that moment that I was going to rechange the trajectory of my life and I was going to start living for my value system. So I went back to the only value system I knew, which was the Judaism I had fought with my father and about my entire life, the Hebrew school I didn't want to go to, the USY I tried to get kicked off of. I was like...
The Orthodox camp, right? The camp that you had to find the right camp and all of it.
Everything. And I was like, let me start this journey and see if Judaism fills up my cup. And as I became more into it, I realized I couldn't get sort of the learning I needed in the States, especially at this point. Now I was living in Northern New Jersey. I just needed to really, my soul needed to connect on a much deeper level. So I went into this career that anyone would have loved. I see you nodding. And I was like, I'm quitting my job. And I moved to Israel to study. And I got to experience the Judaism I never had growing up. And it changed my life.
Did you study at a seminary?
So I started at the conservative yeshiva because I had begun in the conservative movement. From there, I went to JTS Rabbinical School. And then from JTS Rabbinical School, we did a year in Schechter. And then I transferred from JTS into Reconstructionism. So my process has not been that linear, but it was all a journey. And I studied at Pardes. So I've moved in a lot of circles.
That's amazing. Did you love it when you were there? Did you just say to yourself, I'm in the right place, I'm at the right time, and this is my calling for whatever it's worth?
Absolutely. I loved studying and living in Israel. I loved the community. I loved that I was experiencing a Judaism that was so different than the sort of conservadox Southern Jersey shul of my father's Judaism, that I could walk into a synagogue with a mechitza, a boundary, but a woman would be reading the Torah. And it was so moving. And it was also sort of where I learned that Judaism looked a lot of different ways and that you could connect in a lot of different ways, because I was on this journey of finding myself, my soul. And I really, really, I went into the rabbinate, I believe this, because of a true love, Ahavat Yisrael, a true love for the Jewish people and wanting to be with the Jewish people and wanting to work for the Jewish people. So I was going to enter the rabbinate. And unfortunately, with a year or two left, I got too sick. And I had to withdraw, because this whole time I was sort of faking normal for this kind of calling I had.
Yeah.
But what I did not realize at the time was that God had a different plan
for you. And I just want to share with our listeners, so since you were in high school, way before you even got to Israel to study, you discovered that you were suffering from a chronic condition called myalgic encephalomyelitis, also known, did I do that okay?
You did it great. It's such a mouthful.
I practiced. Also known as ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, but for the purposes of this show, we're going to call it MECFS, MECFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. And I understand that it became so bad, you weren't able to stay in Israel, you needed to come back home, and you became housebound and bedbound. Can you tell us more about MECFS and what happened to you?
Sure. So I always say there's never a good time to be diagnosed with chronic illness, but when I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome in 1998, 1999, when I was a freshman in college, it was a particularly awful time. People on the news would call it the yuppie flu. Doctors didn't believe you. There was a sort of coordinated effort, which came out of like the CDC and the NIH, to sort of downplay this disease by using the name chronic fatigue syndrome. Mm-hmm. And if you're Jewish, you know the importance of names. So that name was specifically meant to sort of not showcase the seriousness, to sort of imply it was in women's heads, that this was not a real disease. But what that meant for me at 18, 19 years old was that I couldn't go on disability. I couldn't tell my employers, because there was no sort of safety net for that. And especially what it meant was that if I went and told people I had this disease, they did not believe you. You were labeled a malingerer.
Terrible.
Right? This is the yuppie flu.
Oh boy.
And this was a disease that literally robbed me of being able to wake up in the morning not being exhausted, that literally turned my life into a part-time schedule, that changed my entire existence. Yes. And people didn't believe it was real. So I made a very bad decision in 1998, but it was at the time the only way I knew how to make this decision, which was I was going to survive by not telling anybody I had this disease.
Poor you.
Yeah. And so I faked normal. I withdrew from most of my college classes. I lived on a part-time schedule. When I would go to work, I would crash the entire weekend so I could get through. And same thing, when I started working or went back into rabbinical school, I would hide my disease until it would get to the point where I couldn't hide it anymore.
Which is really probably what happened at the end of the 5 years. You just couldn't hide it anymore. And I really know this to be true, because I know someone who suffers from this condition and I know about it. And we need more empathy and compassion and understanding. Has the stigma changed, would you say? Do you think that more people, because of wonderful books like The Matzah Ball, where you really, the main character, Rachel, really goes through this, and it's explained in such an evocative way that you'd have to be like not very with it to not get it. You get it. And I wonder, I think that book, what a mitzvah that you wrote this book on many levels, which we'll get to. But just speaking about this alone for a moment, that you're helping remove the stigma and really let people know, no, this is a real thing. And in fact, there's a way you have to live with this illness. You can live with it. Yes, there's hope for romance, as you've had in your own personal life with your wonderful husband and as the character Rachel has with Jacob in the book, the Matzah Ball. But can you speak more about how this book and just time since 1998 has helped the stigma?
Absolutely. When I was diagnosed, another huge part of that was I had no models. So I had no examples of women who had sort of lived with my disease, who were successful or had careers or had fallen in love. And so, of course, I didn't know how to be open about it. I didn't know how to talk about it because nobody was open or talking about anything in 1998. I think as I became so sick, the beauty of sort of losing everything, right? I wound up being so sick. I spent 2 years basically homebound, bedbound, meaning my husband would have to wash my hair. I had to use a wheelchair. I spent all my time in an apartment. I wasn't able to write. The feeling of going from an Emmy Award winning rabbinical student to a woman confined to her bed, it was a terrible, terrible sort of experience, but I also had to accept in order to survive that, I had to find my value without the costumes. Right. And there's something very freeing in losing everything. Yes. And it's not only that I began to be able to say, I'm sick, and I began to sort of do advocacy about ME/CFS, it's that I stopped being ashamed. I was no longer going to make other people feel comfortable about my disease. And when I started to be open about my disease, what I found over and over again is women would lean in and say, I'm sick too. And I realized it's like an epidemic. It's not just CFS. It's fibro. It's lupus. It's MS. It's arthritis. Women are suffering, and men, in huge numbers. And the only one silence benefits is everybody else. In the U.S., it benefits insurance companies. It benefits the doctors who don't want to deal with you. It benefits your friends who don't want to hear an excuse why you can't show up. But silence never benefits people. I didn't necessarily start out to write an advocacy book about ME/CFS with the matzah ball, but when I sat down to write the book, I saw a sick character. Mm-hmm. I saw she was homebound. I saw her in her pajamas. And when I knew it was getting published, I knew that this was going to be an incredible work of advocacy. And so we went back and we put in more CFS stuff, more scenes with that, more of her talking about, we put in more. And I really want to give my publisher and editor credit for that. They really allowed me to lean in. And the amount of emails, messages, letters I have gotten, not just that people have given it to their family members to understand what they go through, not just husbands who love somebody who is sick, but women have literally written me to tell me because of this book, I went out and used a wheelchair. I was able to tell people I'm sick. It is so important that we have models, not just for these diverse life experiences that affect so many people, not just for sick people, but for Jewish 100%. People as well.
You created Jewish archetypes because often you read about, sadly, a Holocaust survivor, a child of Holocaust survivors, but you don't have archetypes that are just cool, young, fabulous women doing great things like you were doing in the case of this book. And it's so fascinating because the character, she's not only secretive about her chronic fatigue, ME/CFS, but she's also as well secretive about her vocation, which is the fact that she's published 20 rom-com novels all about Christmas, which as a Jewish girl in your family, you're not allowed to love Christmas. Tell us a little bit about the book, the protagonist, Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt. What inspired you? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and Jean Meltzer when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, I was asking Eugene if you could tell us more about the Matzo Ball and the main character, Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt.
Sure. Yeah. Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt is, in every sense of the word, a nice Jewish girl with a chronic illness, MECFS, who also happens to love, love, love Christmas. Just like you said, so much so that she has written, I believe, 24 Christmas romance books, bestseller, four of which have been made into these Christmas movies. When her diversity conscious publisher asked her to write a Hanukkah rom-com, unfortunately, poor Rachel is just out of inspiration, because we all know Hanukkah is not as magical as Christmas, all as Jewish girls, right? And so she seeks out the only inspiration she can find, this matzo ball party, which is going to be this large-scale Jewish party on the last night of Hanukkah. And there's only one problem. Tickets are completely sold out. And the only way to get one is direct from the ball's creator, which happens to be Jacob Greenberg, her summer camp arch enemy. And also the reason Rachel has to keep everything secret is because she is the daughter of a very famous sort of conservadox rabbi who has written lots of books. He sits on the committees. He's always on the Jewish circuit. So like to have the rabbi's daughter be this Christmas romance novelist is obviously very problematic for her. She feels very ashamed.
Who has another identity, who has another name named Margot,
and Margot Cross.
And on the billboards, you'll see the starring male in the film or in the book. And then you'll see for Margot Cross, you'll just see a red and green ribbon, because you can't, they can't show who you are, because you can never divulge this to your parents. So you're holding on to all of this secrecy, the character, and it's just the tension is incredible. And I just want to also let people know, our listeners, that the matzo balls, or a matzo ball gala, is actually a real thing in major cities, typically held on Christmas Eve or throughout Hanukkah. It's a large-scale event held in big cities, and it began as a way for Jewish singles to meet up during a night when most of their non-Jewish friends were off celebrating. And you've kind of immortalized this now.
Yeah, it's funny. We were even just talking about how at Jewish Joy-Con we should throw a matzo ball one of the nights. For me, there were so many things that contributed to writing this story in this way. I can talk about my niece, who mentioned I had a big nose and feeling like she needed a story where Jewish women were the heroes. That was very important to me. I can tell you that I am a nice Jewish girl who grew up in a machmir, or strict Jewish family, and I loved Christmas, but we were not allowed Christmas. There's a story at the beginning of the book where Rachel is putting up a little green construction paper Christmas tree, and her mom rips it down. That is absolutely my experience. My mom did that, like marched into school if I was singing Christmas carols, started petitions. But I love Christmas. And I did actually, when I was in my late 30s, seeking joy because I was in this, getting out of this sick place I was living in, and I was just trying to hold on to my joy. I did see one day, I was walking around Kohl's and I saw a little silver Christmas tree with little blue balls. And I was like, oh, it's a little Hanukkah bush. And I brought it home and I plugged it in and I was like, oh, amazing. And then I was so filled with shame, I ripped it out of the wall and hid it in my Christmas office, which became the Christmas office.
Yes. Oh, fabulous.
And then really wanting to write something that felt authentic to this sort of Hanukkah Jewish story in this new way. I had felt that, I remember starting the Hanukkah book and thinking, oh, I'll make her a seamstress. And then the more I kept thinking about it, I was like, man, it's like 2020. Like, I don't know any Jewish seamstresses right now. Like, all my friends are doctors or lawyers or tech people or like my third generation, more educated, you know. But seamstresses was a different generation. And I'd say, you know, or writers. And as soon as I thought writers, I was like, that's it. She's a Christmas romance novelist. So and then you have to make the stakes. So I was like, I had been in rabbinical school. So I was like, of course, she's the daughter of a famous rabbi. And and also it allowed me like to have fun, because as someone who's the daughter of this very famous rabbi, she would have a very halakhic mindset, or a mindset that understands Jewish law very, very well. And so it allowed me to sort of make Talmud jokes and things that like she as a character herself would know. And so it was just, it was a really fun book that I'll tell you, I never thought I would get published, but it came from a very authentic
place. And it feels that way. And I also love the way you created Jewish archetypes and characters of all ages that are so relatable. And also so much diversity. Like, there's Jewish characters that are Orthodox and Reform and conservative. And Rachel's best friend, Mickey, is Jewish and gay. And even Rachel's love interest, Jacob, has a very different Jewish upbringing than Rachel, even attending a Catholic school for a number of years, where he learned some wonderful things from Father Sebastian, one of the priests at the Catholic school, who said, everything in life is designed to lead us to a higher purpose. And Rachel loved that, because that works for us too. And it became one of her new favorite quotes. But you never, and I love this, Jean, called any of the characters. You never labeled them Orthodox or conservative or Reform or this or that. They're all just people. And I think this was another mitzvah that you did in this book, is it almost brings everyone together as one, right? Like, you're you're saying that people are all just people. And I love that. Was that a conscious decision?
Absolutely, 100%. I wrote what I felt like was the best of my Jewish world and community. Every character in that book is someone I know, someone who has inspired me, been a part of my life, been there for me when I was sick. Mickey is absolutely my best friend, Aaron, who is now a rabbi. And Bubby is absolutely Gus Manasses, who was a Holocaust survivor, who was one of the most incredible men I have ever met. And everybody, you know, Shmuel is a guy I dated once. So
that's
like
the partner of Jacob in the Muslim.
Yeah. I dated Shmuel. I dated everybody in New York and Jerusalem. And I was very determined to get married at some point. But if it feels real, it's because it is real. And the beauty of our community is that when we're just together, there's so much beauty in the Jewish 100%. World. And I wanted to create access points for everybody.
And you feel it, and you also taste it, smell it, even the food. I love the way Jacob's Bubby and your mother in the book, Rachel's mother in the book, express their love through food. And food is an expression of love. Absolutely. But you can taste the rugelach. You know, it's just beautiful. And even the name of the book, it's like the greatest Jewish comfort food that there is. And I also just want to highlight some of your beautiful and evocative writing. When you first talk about Christmas and Rachel's secret love for Christmas, Rachel, who, as you say, has written 24 Christmas novels, 4 Hallmark movies, all in secret. And this is just one of the pieces of writing that I love from the book. And I quote, "Rachel stepped down from the chair. She knew it was odd, the way she hoarded Christmas trinkets inside her secret office, but she found it comforting. She loved everything about Christmas, the music, the throw pillows, the decor. It brought her to this place of unapologetic joy where nothing bad ever happened and everyone found their happy ending. I just love it so much. I can't help myself, Mickey. I've tried to quit a dozen times, write something else, find some other story filled with the same level of magic, but I always wind up going right back to Christmas. It's Christmas, Rachel, not a drug addiction. It feels like a drug addiction. You know what your problem is?" Mickey snapped his fingers. "You've never experienced real." Rachel sighed dramatically. "I know, but you got it." And what I love was you parlayed that, your secret fascination with Christmas, yours and the character Rachel's, you parlay all of that love and passion for the sparkle and glitter and the beauty and joy of Christmas when you transform the ballroom at the Matzah Ball Gala with twinkle lights and fairy lights and so many beautiful ideas. And the way you wrote that scene, that was so yummy to read this. "Rachel took a look around the room at the Matzah Ball. The space had been transformed. Large swaths of blue and silver fabric draped every square inch of wall and ceiling. The gazillion fairy lights, which Jacob had hammered throughout the room, felt reminiscent of snowflakes or stars. On the main stage where the musical acts would perform was the magnificent 10-foot menorah that Jacob and Rachel had built together. It was dreamlike. Tomorrow, the final pieces would come together. There would be Hanukkah-inspired food and drinks and entertainment. Rachel was certain that Jacob's matzah ball could rival any party she dreamed up in one of her Christmas romances. She wanted to tell him that. I just had the shivers. I actually got teary-eyed because you're right. It's always been seen as a minor holiday, Hanukkah, but you made it special. And for all those girls, Freda LaBruzer Maynard in Raisins and Almonds, who was the only Jewish girl growing up in Birch Hill, Saskatchewan, and saw the Christmas lights and had her one little house with the menorah, this makes it all great.
Yeah, I think what's so wonderful is that in 2024, we're seeing young Jews and all sorts of people sort of reclaim their identity. You know, there's a line in the book about how our parents, there was a fear with Christmas when I was growing up. I'm 45 now. There was a fear with Christmas. It was like the slippery slope. I have a very good friend, Rabbi Yael Buchler, who runs Midrash Manicures, who talks about, who is like the queen of Hanukkah decor and holiday merch. And I think what we've come to realize is something she says is like, when you walk into a Bloomingdale's and you see a Jewish star, it makes you feel good. Yes. Because somebody, a company has invested in you as a people. When we take things from our larger world, My house is fully decorated, Hanukkah, yes. Right? It's Hanukkah bushes and we have a 9-foot menorah in the front and my husband, kind of my Jacob, because he wanted the biggest menorah ever. And we don't particularly live in the most Jewish neighborhood, but we deck out the house. There's a Christmas house across the street from us. We're the Hanukkah house. And no one, I always say, no one would walk into my house and not know we're Jewish. It is clearly a Hanukkah house. I don't feel that it's a slippery slope. I feel like it's a way to connect and to have a new access point to your Judaism. And that is something that's beautiful. Any connection is beautiful.
And then you're giving permission to other Jewish women and men and people to do the same, whether it's wearing a Magen David, a Jewish star, because you're giving permission. You're saying, it's okay, look at me. I've got this big menorah. You can wear a Jewish star. And it's really, so again, it's more than a mitzvah. It's really a tikkun olam, repairing the world situation that you're doing. And it's very serious stuff. It looks like a rom-com, but there's so much more, guys. And it's meaningful. And it did make me cry a number of times throughout the book, even in the acknowledgments when you talked about your husband and the love that you share. And when you talked about Hashem, which is God, and where all of this came from, the inspiration and what you're grateful for and all of that. And you have to read the book, guys, to know more, but it's just wonderful. And I'm so thrilled for you that the production company Sugar 23 has optioned the rights to your first novel, The Matzah Ball, with plans to develop it as a feature film. And I know these things do not happen overnight. Can you tell us what's happening there?
Yeah, it is still in development. People have come in, people have left. There's obviously with like nobody wants this renewed interest. So that's great. I feel very confident. You know, I have become someone that just sort of trusts God. And I feel very confident that it will see its way to a film one day. And for me, the most important thing, I say this to everybody who's interested, is that, you know, there are two groups in the matzah ball I am very concerned about. The first, right, the Jewish groups, I want them to feel that their story is told accurately, that they're portrayed well, that we don't devolve into negative sort of stereotypes. And then, of course, very important to me as someone who's been sick for 20 plus years is that chronic illness disability community, that our disease is, it's okay to laugh at things, right? But our disease must be given proper sort of respect that people who have suffered. The goal is to make it a movie that is a Hanukkah, Christmas classic that you want to pull out and watch
every
with your family.
Every year. So great.
Because also one of the ways people talk about it is like, you don't have to be Greek to love my big fat Greek
That's
wedding.
Right.
And you don't have to be Jewish to love the matzah ball.
Right.
It's a very universal book. But it's also a book that if a movie is done wrong, it could do damage. So for me, my number one thing, and I have been tough on people who have been interested in this book to turn it into a movie. I've been very tough on people, especially as of late, because it really needs to be done correctly in my
100%,
mind.
100%. I agree with that so much. And so you're a very prolific writer, Jean. Your other published books are Mr. Perfect on Paper, Kissing Kosher, Magical Meet Cute, and you have a fifth book coming soon titled The 8 Heartbreaks of Hanukkah, which really ricochets back to your first book, The Matzah Ball, And I understand that people can pre-order that book right now. We're going to tell them again at the end, but just briefly, can you tell us more about The Eight Heartbreaks of Hanukkah? What a great gift for people. And how can people pre-order it?
We're going to find out all about that right after this short commercial break. We'll be back with Finding Your Bliss and author Jean Meltzer when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, I was asking Eugene if you could tell us about your upcoming book, The Eight Heartbreaks of Hanukkah.
Absolutely. So you will be able to pre-order it wherever books are sold. If you want a signed copy, Park Books in Severna Park, Maryland, you can just go to my socials and you'll see the links for things. They can absolutely do international orders too, if you're not based in the U.S. But The Eight Heartbreaks of Hanukkah is returning to my first love of writing, which is a good holiday rom-com. And I am very, very proud of this book because it is actually a Hanukkah retelling of A Christmas Carol. So I know, and it is so good, guys. It's probably, I am so proud of it. And it's about this TV producer, Evelyn Schwartz. She's doing a live action musical of A Christmas Carol, and she is a chronic migraine sufferer. And essentially, she hits her head in the piano and she wakes up to find that her ex-husband, Dr. David, is in the medical bay. He's taken this short-term gig and they haven't talked in 2 years. And basically, she starts to be visited by the eight heartbreaks of Hanukkah. And the question is, will these two ex-lovers, these Bashir, be able to rekindle the flames for themselves? So it is great. It's so good. And what I love about holiday books is you really get to explore the best of the world, the best of humanity, the best of our joy. And again, also, who doesn't love a good Christmas Carol of Charles Dickens? I mean, so it's a great story.
So great. Will you come back before that, when that book is launched, and tell us about it? Because I'd love that.
I would be honored. I am here.
I'd love that. I'd love to just briefly talk about your writing process. And I read somewhere that because of your ME/CFS, you will write sometimes for 4 hours, then rest, sometimes even eat dinner in bed, do your meditation in the morning. Like, it's very planned. And can you tell me more about your writing process and what it's like for you to write?
I have to be extremely careful. So before anything, I always have to put my health first. I have learned if I don't put my health first, I get sicker. So the bulk of my books are actually written in bed, because for me, it's easier to sort of be lying prone, to not sort of be using that energy. I write with an outline. So I spend about 3 weeks doing a very big outline, so that even on a bad day, I'm able to use that outline to sort of get through, okay, this is my chapter. But I want to give people hope who have brain fog or who have fatigue issues or just even mobility and pain issues. I think I have learned to work with my disease in order to write these stories. And sometimes, you know, I talk about this in Magical Meet Cute a little bit. Sometimes I wonder, oh, would I be a better writer if I didn't have this disability? But the truth is, I wouldn't be me as a writer. These stories wouldn't have that sort of depth and that flavor of a Jean Meltzer who was a completely healthy person. Maybe I had not ever, would have never written these books. And so my thing I want to say to folks is, like, in finding your bliss, in finding your joy and living in that place, even if it's one line a day, even if it's Yeah, just do it and do it for you. Do it for your joy. And if you write from an authentic place, you will find your audience.
Absolutely.
But don't give
up.
Don't believe you're not capable.
So true. It reminded me when I heard you say, Albert Steiglitz, the black and white photographer, once said, I'd rather spend 6 months of my life with Georgia O'Keeffe, the painter, than a lifetime with another woman. So it's the same kind of thing. It's like, even if it's 20 minutes a day, but it's a great 20 minutes. And I love your spoon. You call it the spoon theory. Can you tell us about that for people who...
Absolutely. So the spoon theory has been around in the chronic illness community for a while. And essentially, if you start your day with 12 spoons, if you're sick, maybe normal people have 24 or 36, yes, and you can judge for yourself where you are on that scale. And then as you do something, you take away a spoon. So for example, if you take a shower, for me, that's somewhat tiring. So I take a spoon, yes, away. If I'm writing for 4 hours, maybe I'll take 3 spoons away. And the idea is you always sort of want to work within your energy envelope. The other thing that I will tell you personally is my theory of betterment. I have done everything in my life in 2% increments of better. So it's very Tikkun Olami. I think that's where I got the idea. But when I was so sick, because I get asked this question all the time, how did you get out? The goal was never to be able to walk 3 hours around a museum, because I didn't think at the time I would necessarily get back to that place. But I thought to myself, maybe I can walk around the block. And so 2% increments of better. If it makes you feel better, do more of it. If it makes you feel worse, get rid of it. So you don't need to do a marathon, right? It's meditation, huge, right? Taking a few moments, getting rid of the negative thoughts that you're an invalid or invalid or you're not worthy. You know, there is so much to be said for just sitting in your quiet and knowing your worth. So being in a positive place and taking out things that are negative. And then again, writing when you're ready, when you're able to do the things that give you joy. To this day, like right now, I'm not writing on a deadline because I have all this stuff with Jewish joy going on. But I write when I get anxious. I write when I need to sort through something emotionally, because I write when I'm in pain, because writing is my happy place. So that's really it. Everybody, just find your joy. And
honestly, your writing advice is so incredible. Really, really incredible stuff. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. You just mentioned the Jewish Joy Book Club. Can you tell us what it is? You launched it at the end of 2023.
We did. So again, I am still that, you know, the joke, you can take the girl out of rabbinical school. You know, I still very much, I will talk about it. October 7th happened. My community was reeling. And I had this group, Jewish women, talk about romance books. But what happened was we started having this influx of women who were saying, can you start a book club? Because I no longer feel safe in my own book club. I no longer can be part of this online group. So of course, because of my love for the Jewish people and my love for readers, I was like, sure, why not? And I'm sure you know, whenever you guys have this beautiful 6 years Finding Your Bliss podcast, but it takes a lot to like read books and organize writers and get graphics together. Yes. So I was like, we need some people to help. But to do that, we need to make some money. So I wound up starting a business and I was like, let's start subscription boxes. And not only will this support small Jewish businesses and Jewish authors who are experiencing anti-Semitism, but it will allow readers at home who are feeling so disconnected sort of have a new access point. And I always say, this is the box I needed when I was sick. This is the community and the connection and the joy I needed when I couldn't leave my house. Yeah. And then, you know, again, people were like, Jean, a retreat. And if you want to believe that God has a hand in this, literally not a day after I went to Trademark Jewish Joy Con, I get hooked up with this through a mutual bookstore friend with a con management company. And so we do a meeting, we talk about it, and they're like, yes, we're in, we want to do this. And by the way, my grandmother was Jewish and her name was Jean. So I was like, you want to talk about synchronicity?
Wow.
So we are on for spring of 2026. It will be a huge party celebration of Jewish life but really the goal of my organization is to support and uplift the Jewish creative economy.
Great. You have to come back for sure.
Well, you have to come.
Oh, I want to come. I do. I love that. You also have this, I see it in the background, hot pink, my favorite color, as you can see in my background, Jewish Joy Box. You just tell us briefly about your brainchild, the Jewish Joy Box. What is an example, what it is, and what's inside of it?
Absolutely. So every box goes in coordination with our book club pick. So it's always a Jewish book that focuses on joy. Originally, when the Jewish Joy Book Club started, we had one rule, and that was nobody Jewish dies at the end. So these are stories that uplift Jewish life, where the Jewish characters fall in love, where great things happen. It's not going to be sad or depressing. No dead Jews. And then we build an entire box around this book. So we create custom merch and Judaica or bookish items. For our last book, there was very much with the author about Shabbat. So we made a beautiful challah cover with the Jewish Joy Book Club logo. We made a recipe box that you can keep your Shabbat items in. We partnered with a small Jewish business called Jewish Card Revoked as part of a game that we put in. And so every box not only supports Jewish authors and Jewish small businesses, but there's always a craft or a cooking item. We had recipes in there. My challah, Leah Koning, who's a cookbook author. We've had Ali Rosen do a cookbook recipe for us. So, you know, we are really trying to make Jewish Joy a place where Jewish creatives of all types are supported and uplifted. And also the belief that, like, as a world, we should all invest in keeping these stories, these joyous 100%. Efforts alive. So of every course. Penny we make right now goes back into building for the con, for the community. So it's really a passion project. And thank God it's been going well.
I was telling a bunch of women, I had a recent milestone birthday and I had a birthday dinner last night. And I was telling a bunch of my girlfriends about you and about this. They're like, we want to know, how do we get it? How do we order it? I got them on your Instagram and I told them, and I'll tell you more. You have to listen to the show. And in light of all of your writing, Jean, and the Jewish characters that you write about, and of course about yourself, how are you handling this onslaught of worldwide anti-Semitism that has come as an aftermath of October 7th? Instead of it being a time of extra kindness and compassion for the Jewish people, it's been the opposite. It's been like a raging wildfire. How do you deal with this as a Jewish author? And what are your thoughts on all of this?
So obviously, it's been difficult for everybody seeing the way, not just forget me being trolled or whatnot, but seeing the kids on college campuses. I just did an event at BBYO ICCon, which was 6,000 Jewish teens. And to think about what Jewish teens are talking about, having to fight in their schools to be accepted or to be proudly Jewish or to wear a Star of David. So for me, you know, I was part of the founding group, Artists Against Anti-Semitism. But instead of, I sort of focused a little bit more on Jewish joy, because I believe that there's two sides to fighting anti-Semitism. The first side, right, is education, and we have lots of great programs that are doing that. But I think the other way is sort of acknowledging that it's going to be a problem that never completely goes away. And so if we can't combat anti-Semitism, what we can do is model Jewish pride. We can be louder and prouder. And especially for young people, they need to see their heroes, the authors they love. They need us to be strong for them. And so for me, I never wanted to make any of this my issue or my, I just wanted to write love stories and celebrate my identity and be there for my people. But when October 7th happened, I felt that my values said, if you market and write books for Jews, you must stand up for Jews. And so the big message I just give is that the most important thing we can do now, we can't combat anti-Semitism, we can't change the world. But on a small level, we can really make it a point to allow the people around us to see us being loud and proud and not being silenced. And I think by doing that, we make a stronger community. And then it doesn't matter what they think about us or try to throw at us, because when you know where you stand, you will never fall over.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And also, we can be an example of joy and love and light and goodness and solidarity. And when we're all together as Jews, like all of your characters in the book are, the Orthodox Reform, there's no, right? And that's where it's
Amen.
All about. I just got back from Israel a couple of weeks ago because I have some very close family living there. And it was very hard to leave. And I've never thought this way before, but I actually said to one of my children, I can actually imagine living here, even though I have very much a career here and so does, but I could see it for the first time, you know, which is very busy. can't wait.
We'll be neighbors. Because I always felt like the 6 month here, 6 month there thing. It's very, I feel this the same way. I mean, it's just a beautiful country, beautiful people, beautiful food. And when you're Jewish, there's no other place to be, really.
It's our home away from home, and it really is our home. And I want to tell everyone to check out the Chronically Fabulous podcast with Jean Meltzer as well. There's so much more. I don't even know. You have courses. You offer a wide variety of workshops and classes. How can people get involved in something like Pitch Perfect Romance, Learn the Secrets to Writing Tension-Filled Romance, or Writing Jewish Joy, Reenvisioning Jewish Stories for Modern Age? How can people get connected to that?
One thing I want to say is that Jewish Joy as a brand is expanding, and we hope to offer more classes as well as the con being filled with great panels. We're also hoping for like an online version of that. So you should definitely be subscribed to our newsletter either at thejewishjoybox.com or jeanmeltzer.com. You'll get the information disseminated that way. Both ways, same thing, because we do a monthly author chat. We do Hanukkah bazaars online. We do author events with our games. So it's lots of fun. And also, if you wanted me specifically to do some of these events, best way is through our newsletter, but you can also just send me an email at gina@gmeltzer.com. And hopefully someone will get back to you. It won't get lost. I'm not saying, but you know. But we will do our best to get back to you on a timely matter. So we're here to just create what people need. So feel free to also tell me what you need, because I am listening.
Jean, what is the greatest rose gold golden nugget that you want people to take away from this book, The Matzah Ball?
That everything good in your life will come from being authentic. People are so afraid of authenticity. And if the journey teaches me anything, it's that all the best things in your life will come when you are honestly your authentic self.
I really love that. That really lands in a very deep place. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show, and of course, we're going to ask it to you as well. What is bliss for Jean Meltzer?
Right now, I would say bliss is being present in the moment, whether that is doing a podcast, whether that's walking my puppy, whether that's sitting outside on my porch on a spring day, or even being sick in my bed. Bliss is acceptance and understanding that everything is in God's plan.
What a great way to live. I love that. The best way for people to purchase a copy of The Matzah Ball and all of your other books and to pre-order the Hanukkah book, The 8 Heartbreaks of Hanukkah.
I am wherever books are sold. So local bookstores, talk to your libraries. I think in Canada, I've even been in grocery stores, which was awesome. I'm in airports sometimes. So, I mean, all you have to do, and you can also go to my website, jeanmeltzer.com, lots of links there. But really, anywhere books are sold, you can find. So check out your local indies and definitely pre-order not just my books, other Jewish romance books, because if you want these stories to continue, you know, we need to show the publishers that we have sales. So please pre-order our books.
Great. What about your social media, like Instagram? What's the best way for people to follow you? What's your handle?
Instagram, Jean Meltzer, Facebook, Jean Meltzer Author. And of course, our group on Facebook is Jewish Women Talk About Romance Books, which is where the home of the Jewish Joy Book Club operates out of. And so you can find me in all those places talking, schmoozing. I get to know my fans and followers very well if you see my socials. So I love connecting with people. So drop me a line, come say hi at an event, be there at Jewish JoyCon. We are just here for you.
Awesome. I want to thank you so much, Jean Meltzer, for being on the show. It's really been an honor to have you here. And I'm a little verklempt. Is that okay?
Oh my gosh. It is my honor. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the listeners. You know, time is the most precious commodity. I'm just so grateful to be here. And really, anytime, anything you guys need or want, I am here for you. Thank you, Judy. Really fabulous.
Thank you. And ditto, right back to you. Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Jean Meltzer, who is living her bliss, but more importantly, is helping other people live their bliss. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. All you have to do is search up Judy Liebrach. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook.
I would love to thank our wonderful guest, Jean Meltzer, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Eva Shabbatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Giuliani Anciello, Ben Thomas, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.